Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode number 68. Have we figured out a number thing about 68?
I just thought we were going to do spooky noises.
Spooky noises. 68 spooky noises. You heard it here. No? Not really. All right. Well, anyway, we are the Family Gamers. I am your host, Andrew. As always, I am here with my lovely wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And we are here to bring you an awesome show. We are, in fact, going to talk about four frightfully fun finds for this Halloween season. It is October. It's the middle of October. Last week, we did a Halloween-y themed Kickstarter interview.
Yeah.
Right?
And in the same vein as Scream or Die, we decided to look through our collection and also the collections of our friends to find great games that are Halloween-y but appropriate for younger children.
Right. So that's the trick, right? So there's lots and lots of Halloween-themed games or kind of scary-themed games that are out there, but a lot of them are not really suited for kids. I mean, there's all the zombie stuff, right? So like Dead of Winter or Last Night on Earth or Z-Pocalypse. Ah, Z-Pocalypse.
And most of those are both too scary and too difficult.
Right. And of course, there's Betrayal at the House on the Hill.
Yes.
Right? And then there's all the Arkham stuff, all the Lovecraft stuff and all that. So there's a ton of stuff, and we know that. But the games that we're looking at are games that we can play with our kids.
Yeah. Games that have just a little bit of spooky, just a little bit of creepy, but mostly, you know, just kind of bring in that Halloween theme and stay fun.
Right. I mean, and some of them don't even really have spooky or creepy. Like, you have, like, Casper the Ghost isn't spooky. He's just a ghost. Right? So,
all right.
So, it, you know, it, in much of the same way that Scream or Die is definitely a game with that strong Halloween theme, it's not really scary or spooky.
Yeah.
It just kind of has the Halloween stuff. And so, some of the stuff that we're going to bring up today is just like that. But before we do that, we have been playing a lot of really great games. This has been a really good 2 weeks for gaming.
Yes, it has.
You know, last episode 66, we kind of we had had like a lull of gaming, and it was kind of rough. And then
we crammed a lot into the next 2 weeks.
Oh, man, it's been great. There's been some really, really awesome stuff. And number one on the list is a game that that Ed Wilcox, one of our listeners, specifically said, I want to hear your impressions of that game. And that's Scythe. We finally played
Scythe.
From Jamie Stegmeier and Stonemeyer Games.
Yeah. A friend of ours brought it over, and we said, oh, we're excited to play this game.
Yeah, there was some like flash sale or whatever, like $55, and he jumped on that and picked it up and brought it over, and we finally got to play it. What did you think?
It was definitely a very heavy game, a fairly heavy game.
It's a medium weight
which
game.
I expected. Well, I mean, something that takes 20 minutes to set up is not what I would call a medium weight game.
It's a medium weight game. I'm not trying to mansplain. I'm sorry.
In my opinion,
I respect you. I respect your position. It is medium for me.
Medium for you. Heavy for me.
Kalis.
It's fine.
Twilight Struggle Through the Ages. Much more complicated.
Yes, those are games I won't even play.
I will. I will relent.
On the heavier end. Anyway,
stop talking about me like that.
But anyway, for a game that was kind of on the heavier end, once we got into it, it did not take long to get a good feel for what you could do on your turn. Mm-hmm. And it hit a lot of the same buttons for me as like Civilization, that you can, which is a computer game, that you can pick a different thing to focus on your turn.
Right. Yeah, it was very streamlined. So there's a lot, very elegant would be an excellent word to use. There's a lot of things going on, but it's not, everything really is interrelated. So it's not like you have to kind of separately manage different aspects of your country's kind of political and military campaign.
Like Tolkien. You had to keep track of a whole bunch of stuff in your head at once for Zolkin.
Everything's still related in Zolkin. It's just but less related.
Yeah. So there were kind of a lot of moving pieces, but it's all very clear on the map. You have three kinds of units. They do 90% the same things with a few minor adjustments one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has the same kinds of actions that they can do on their turn, but they're kind of laid out in different ways depending on the player board you get.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned Civilization. For anybody who's played the Civilization video games, especially in the later ones like Civ 4 and beyond, every country had a special unit, which was a lot like some other military unit, but with kind of an extra tweak or an extra power. And that was sort of the case in Psych as well.
Yeah, I felt kind of like that with
Psych. I think... I don't remember who you, what nation or whatever you were. Do you remember? I was the Soviet Russians or whatever. Rusviets.
You were the Rusviets.
The Rusviets, right. And I, my special ability was it because I was Rusviets that I could, do the same action twice?
Yes.
Or was that because of my...
No, that's because you were Rusviets.
Okay. Yeah, so that was like my kind of special thing that I could do. And yours was that your workers could swim for free.
Yes. But my other units could not.
But your other units could not. And so there's a lot of kind of generic mechanics with a little bit of extra flavoring for each.
Yeah. Just a little twist, which is nice. You're not learning large sets of different rules for different civilizations.
And I mean, the you know, you mentioned this a little bit, the iconography was gorgeous. The board was beautiful.
Pretty.
The player mats are awesome because they're double thick cardboard and the top layer has cutouts for everything. So they all slot in nicely, kind of like the deluxe Power Grid has that kind of board thing that all the pieces slot into. So that was just, it was just a nice playing experience. You know, it's one of those things like you pay the Apple tax because it's just a nice user experience.
It's very well thought out and designed. For you.
Yep. So at what's happening is it's a hex board. Each hex has some kind of resource. And so you have to move your workers around to gather resources, resource management, so that you can do things like upgrade your units. What's the term when you train the cylinders?
Recruit.
So you're recruiting other things and you have... Everything is all based on your popularity, basically, right? So you have to keep yourself high on power just in case you get into a fight, although there's a lot less fighting than I expected. You need to make sure that you're popular.
Yeah.
Right? And then what else?
Well, your popularity and your power are both affecting how you can reach other victory conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But there are victory conditions that you can achieve from just... maxing out your power or maxing out your popularity. There's about 10 possible victory conditions, and the first person who hits 6 of them, the game ends.
Right, the game ends. That doesn't necessarily mean that person wins.
Right.
But that's when the game ends. There's also one thing which I thought gave the game really great flavor, is there's these, I don't remember what they're not objectives, but what are they? They're like little stories almost where you land on
encounters.
You land on certain hexes that have these kind of encounter tokens on them and you get to draw a card. And it basically says, for example, you know, you come upon a small family at their,
in their cabin in the woods.
In their cabin in the woods, overlooking their apple orchard.
Yeah.
And you have three choices. You can either like pay them to produce apples for you. You can kill the family and take over the orchard, or you can just buy apples from them or something like that. And each one of those has a different set of bonuses and
of power
negatives
and
or
popularity and money. And
so it almost
resources.
Kind of it almost plays into like those morality decisions in video games.
Yeah,
kind of thing. So. You know, you're going to get the most immediate bang for your buck if you just murder everybody and take all their stuff, but your popularity is going to drop.
Yeah.
But that might not matter to you because for whatever reason. But the thing about popularity in this game is popularity is a multiplier.
Yes.
So as your popularity goes up, all the other things that you get points for get multiplied at the end of the game.
At the end of the game, though, that's the key.
Right.
So especially early in the game, you may go, I'm not using my popularity right now. Sure.
Right.
But then you're going to want to fight later on to drag your popularity up.
Right. Speaking of fighting, one thing I was actually really surprised about with this game is there's very little fighting going on.
Yeah. Well, a big part of it is, again, it's that thoughtful design. Of those 10 victory condition things, every civilization except one can only... you can get a victory thing for winning a fight
twice, and that's it.
And then that's it. So it's not really to your benefit to go around seeking a lot of fights.
Right. You're definitely fighting for a reason. You're like, you know, I really need to move through this square.
Yeah.
Right. And
stop blocking off this square.
Exactly. So the other thing that's nice is if you lose a fight, your units just go back to home base. They don't get destroyed.
Yeah.
And as long as you tried in some way, even if it was like sort of lip service, you get a benefit for losing the fight. Like you get to draw some cards or something like that, which is nice. Anytime your military unit moves through a square, moves through a hex that has an opposing player's workers unit, you lose popularity.
Yes.
So
you're not really committing your military at all. But you become very unpopular if you, you know, march through and
So a few weeks ago when we were talking about Boston Fig, I mentioned that game Pinball Express and how it was really incredible how absolutely every aspect of this game, like if you thought about how a pinball machine would work, that's the thing that
all
happened.
Fit together, yeah.
And I'm not saying that Jamie Stegmaier is around some mechs somewhere, but it seems like every single aspect of this game is, you know, the thing that would happen if it actually took place is what happens in the game.
It all fits together very neatly.
Yeah, it's very elegant. So we're not formally reviewing Scythe, but it would get a pretty high score from us, I think.
Yeah.
We're talking probably nines.
If you're
nines.
Down for a couple hours of gameplay,
it's
fantastic.
Yeah, it's very, very good. Right. And
now I understand why also that the one guy whose name has suddenly escaped me again, how he could make it into a completely differently themed game. My Little Scythe.
Okay.
Because he just turned the fighting into... I mean, the fighting is non-lethal.
Right.
So, yeah. Your ponies can have a little fight and kick one back to home base. Whatever.
Whatever you say, Twilight Sparkle.
Not to belabor the point, but Scythe is very good.
Yes.
There either is an expansion or there's going to be an expansion soon. I don't know.
They left room for an expansion.
One thing, so you have the player the main board, but if you flip it over, it's half of the board at double the size.
You want
so
a
somehow
giant
you can get
board.
The other half somehow, and you have this giant board to play on, which is kind of awesome.
Yeah. So. All right. Moving on to another awesome game.
Oh my gosh.
Magic Maze.
This game's so good. So we've mentioned Magic Maze before, and we also mentioned that it was one of the runner-ups for the Spiel des Jahres.
Yes.
And I swear to you, and I'm gonna ask him, that Tom Vassell said he thought Magic Maze should have won over King Domino.
Now that we've played it, I can see why.
I completely agree with that.
If he said it or not, that is now our opinion. King Domino is a great game.
Right.
It's a great game.
But Magic Maze is better.
Magic Maze is better. Right. Magic
to be perfectly clear, I believe that what I heard was Tom, before the announcements were made, saying, I think Magic Maze should win, but I think King Domino will.
Got it.
I think that's what he said. And that's because it hadn't been localized to the U.S. yet.
Yeah.
Magic Maze is fantastic. It is an easy-to-understand game. It's a ton of fun. It's simultaneous gameplay.
And it's unlike any other game out there.
Yes, completely different mechanics. From basically anything else. So the way Magic Maze works, you are you are a party of adventurers. There's a warrior, a barbarian. A barbarian, a dwarf, an elf, and a mage, sorcerer, whatever.
Yeah.
And there are these four colored tokens, and you start on one tile.
Mm-hmm.
And what you basically have to do is you have to move the right color token to these kind of explore icons at the edges of the tile to keep laying out the rest of the mall.
Yeah.
And the goal is to get each one of those four guys onto the correct icon to indicate the item that they would want to steal.
Yes.
Right. So there's only one bow and arrow in green, and that's the thing that the elf wants. And there's only one potion in purple, and that's the thing that the mage wants, etc.
Yeah.
The thing about this game that is so unique is that every single player only has a certain subset of movements that they can control, and they control them for all four pawns.
Yes. It's part of why it makes a great cooperative game, because you can, the way the game is set up, it can split up these different kinds of movements for two players or three or four or five or eight players.
All the way up to eight. So they have a set of basically movement tiles, and they all have numbers at the bottom. So if you have six players, you take the ones that have six at the bottom, et cetera, et cetera. And those are the things that you dish out so that everybody has in front of them the moves that they're allowed to have these things
and,
do.
And you all orient them the same way so that, you know, north is the same for everybody.
So it's super unique.
And the other thing about it is that you're not supposed to talk at all.
Right. There's no communication, except there's a giant red pawn that if somebody else has to do something and they're not seeing it, you take it and you put it in front of them. It's the, like, get your attention pawn.
Do something.
Like, the do something pawn.
The do something pawn.
Right. So, like, if you need somebody to go to a certain place, you grab that thing and you put it in front of them and they stare at it and they make the, face, and you just kind of wait because you can't say anything.
Well, because otherwise the only way you could try to communicate to someone that they need to do something is just stare at them intently. Right.
So another nice wrinkle here is there's a sand timer going.
Yes.
Right. And so there are icons on the map that if you move to the icon, you put an out of order little token on it, but you flip the sand timer over.
Yeah.
And then as long as nobody touches any pawns, you can talk until someone touches a pawn. Yeah. Once somebody touches a pawn, then no more talking.
Then no more talking again. Yeah. I really enjoy this game. I really enjoy that. So the rule book kind of lays out scenarios. So it teaches you how to play the game little by little, which is great.
There's 17 scenarios in the book. The first seven of them, every next scenario adds another permanent rule.
Yeah.
So you're really you're building up.
Yeah. But you're only adding one thing on at a time, so it gives you time to sort of process what's going on.
Right, and because of the way the exploration works and the shuffled tiles, it's still programmatically generated, quote-unquote. So even if you're playing the first scenario over and over and over again, it's still different every time.
Yeah.
It's so well done.
Yeah. I will say, it makes me want to try some more real-time cooperative games.
Okay.
Because I'm intrigued. Really enjoying it.
Sure.
Like Flatline or Fuse.
Yeah. Or like really any of those escape room games, right? That would be kind of the same kind of stuff.
Most of those are real time. Yeah.
So, I mean, the art is hysterical. Remember how we talked about Baron Park and we said there's so many nice little Easter eggs on the tiles?
Yeah.
Yeah. Magic Maze raises the bar 100%.
They're not even trying to hide it.
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, it's so much. We spent 20 minutes just looking at tiles.
And It's very Douglas Adams, Terry Pratchett-esque in the humor that they present.
Yeah, this kind of over-the-top, like...
Well, I mean, you're a party of classic fantasy adventurers. Classic fantasy adventurers in a mall.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to steal stuff. I mean, it's already going to be funny.
It reminds me of that episode of The New Voltron that's on Netflix where they had to get those crystals and they went to the mall to do it.
Yes, exactly.
Which, by the way, was a fantastic episode of that show. So we loved Scythe and we also love Magic Maze. Two very different games. Both excellent.
Yes. What else? We pulled out some Brew Dice.
Yeah, we've talked about Brew Dice on the show a bunch.
We had Andy Jeremiah on.
We had him on for Sports Dice Baseball. But it's a really great casual party game.
Yep.
A lot of fun.
I will point out that the box does say 21 plus because it's
beer.
About beer.
Yeah.
However, our kids also love playing this game.
Yeah, we can make it about root beer. It's cool.
A couple of days ago, they just pulled it out on their own. They're like, hey, let's play Brew Dice. And I was like, sure.
I will relax and have a beer. You can play Brew Dice.
It's a great, simple game. It's fun. I've brought it places with me and been like, hey, I've got 5 minutes. Want to play a game with me?
Well, it's nice because, you know, and we've talked about these kinds of games a lot. It's small. You can throw it in a purse or a backpack or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's super easy to pick up and play just about anywhere.
Well, and each person has three dice, so it's not a ton of stuff to keep track of.
Yeah. I mean, Quingo still is the gold standard for keeping track of stuff, but I like Brew Dice a lot.
Yeah.
Good game.
All right. What else? We played a couple games of Super Hack Override.
Yeah, so Super Hack Override is a game from Weird Draft Games. It kickstarted a little bit ago. It was successful and all that stuff, and it's fulfilling. We're going to have a review out on the site in the next day or two.
Yep.
So I guess we'll pretty much leave it there.
Stay tuned for that.
You should definitely check it out. There is a right type of person for this game.
Yes. If you are a computer programmer, you will probably like this game. Computer nerd. Whatever. All right. What else did we play? I finally got a chance to play Downforce.
Yeah.
That review that Corey wrote intrigued me so much that the next time I saw him, I said, hey, can we play Downforce?
Right.
And he said, yes, yes, we can.
Yeah, so last week, we released a review for Downforce, the latest from Restoration Games, which is basically it's not a remake, it's a restoration of Daytona 500.
And slash.
I don't remember the other one. Top speed, pole position, I don't remember. It's in the review. Anyway, it's a fantastic game. We had a lot of fun.
You and I never played the old game. So.
I cannot believe I came in second place, by the way, by the end of that.
I lost so badly.
Yeah, well, that's because you spent so much money.
I didn't know what I was doing. It was fun.
It was a good time.
All right, what else?
You got me to play number 9.
I did get you to play number
9.
Number 9.
Yeah, you know what? It's an abstract strategy game. It's your
jam.
Which
is why I love it.
You love those. It was fine. That's pretty much all I have to say about that.
It's one of those, it makes you think in different ways about how to puzzle it together.
Yeah, I mean, I would need to play it more than once because I didn't know how the tiles were going to look.
Yeah.
So I was playing with, one hand tied behind my back, so to speak. So, but it was fine.
Yeah.
I wouldn't not play it again.
I like the simplicity of
Double negative.
What else? We picked up Bob Ross Art of Chill.
Oh, man. We got the game. We did. And Jeff Jackson wanted to know how this game was. It was a very chill experience.
I was going to say, it was not nearly as chill as it would
pretend to
be.
Well, it wasn't nearly as chill because there were 8 children in the house.
Also, we played it kind of competitively.
Yeah, it was fine. Okay, so here's the deal with this game. The mechanics are fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't blow me away. It's fine. You kind of need to be into the theme.
Yes.
Right. If you're not into the Bob Ross thing,
give this game a pass.
You're just gonna be like, eh. At least it was only $25.
Yeah, you and your fellow players are competing. You're basically racing to complete sections of a Bob Ross painting, before the other players do,
and before Bob.
And you're also trying to race Bob because you get bonus points if you finish sections before Bob does.
Right. And by bonus points, you mean moving from red to chill. So,
you
I mean,
become
it's a very
more chill than Bob.
It's a very pretty game, right?
Yeah.
I think this is one of those games where you'd face stack it on a shelf, right?
So you could see Bob's face
and his head full of painting.
His afro full of
happy little trees. but yeah, I mean, it's got a lot of call outs to the Bob Ross stuff.
So
obviously.
Much.
I mean, it's only $25 exclusive to Target right now. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah,
we might bring this on our ski trip because I think there might be enough people there who like this. This is a good gateway game, honestly, because
it is.
It's not complicated. It's a strong, I mean, it's got a strong theme to it. It's got a strong theme to it, but it's not super deep.
The only part I didn't find completely intuitive was there are these technique cards and you spend your other cards to gain technique cards, and all the technique cards are is bonus points. They don't actually help you do anything.
Right.
So that part seemed a little
weird. It might make it more complicated to say, okay, so if you've got the fan brush, you don't need to play a fan brush.
Yeah.
Or if you play a fan brush, you get the bonus point.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. That's a nice house rule, though. I like that house rule.
We should try that sometime.
We should have that discussion.
All right. What else? Even more games. We also played one of our old school favorite games before we became game collectors.
Before we became us.
True.
Before we became reasoning adults.
Yeah.
2017 is the 35th anniversary of Steve Jackson's Illuminati.
Oh, I love this game.
This game is so good.
It's so funny.
It is.
It's so great.
I highly recommend this game to basically anybody. You play as one of the Illuminati, and you are trying to basically take over groups to gain control of the world, and you won.
I did. Because I had a secret goal.
Yes. It's really funny. It's very sarcastic and satirical.
My one complaint is, like many games of the 80s, it's rather fiddly.
I don't think it's that bad.
It's not bad, but if you did it again now, I think they would, if you were starting from scratch with the same idea, you would come up with some other way besides all the little money chits.
You might have track of stuff. Different shapes.
Or something. Yeah.
Because you have to look at the chit to know how much it is, kind of thing. Okay. Yeah, maybe. But yeah, that game is fantastic. It is a lot of fun. We've never played it with somebody who didn't like it.
Most of what makes it fun is the ridiculousness of it. Yeah.
I would like to use the orbital mind control lasers to take over the
Congressional wives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or actually, I don't think you can do that because the orbital mind control lasers do not have an out arrow.
Yes, they do. But they only have one.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, it's the evil scientists for a better tomorrow that don't have an out.
They don't have an out.
Got it.
Yes.
Anyway, you get the idea. Fantastic game.
Yeah. Probably not one that is overly kid-friendly.
No, it's not kid-friendly at all.
All right, what else? Our kids played some games with us. They also played some games without us. I have news for you.
News for me?
Yes. Our 3-year-old managed to win a game of Super Smash Brothers, what is it, Brawl, whatever the Wii version is.
The Wii U version.
Super Smash Brothers Wii U, I think it is.
I think, yeah.
He actually won a game.
That's funny.
Versus our other two children and your sister.
I assume his handicap was, like, jacked.
I assume he had some kind of handicap. I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention.
Anyway, congratulations to our 3-year-old. That's fantastic.
Everyone cheered.
That's funny.
So, yeah, that's still a favorite when friends come over. The kids taught their aunt, your sister, how to play Rummy Cube. It's another good classic.
And she turned around and ordered one.
Yes, she did. She enjoyed playing it. And we also brought out Robo Diner to show her. Mm-hmm. I'm still enjoying that game. Looking forward to when it is actually ready for release.
Right. So that's not going to go to Kickstarter, right? That's going to go straight to release.
Yeah, it's. I believe he's doing it through the Game Crafter.
Cool.
And our oldest asked for a game she hasn't played in about a year and a half, Counting Kingdom.
Counting Kingdom is a PC release from Little World Interactive. That's Jenna Hofstein's little company. It is a great game to learn arithmetic, and she has been struggling with arithmetic, and she decided that this would be a fun way to try to work on her arithmetic, and go her, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it is that she really doesn't want to work on her multiplication, so she's just shoring up her addition and subtraction, and I'm okay with that.
I thought this had multiplication later on.
A little bit, not a whole lot.
Not that much? Okay. Well.
I'm still okay with that.
Yeah.
For now.
Yeah. I'm going to burn those times tables into her head.
We'll get there.
Okay.
Eventually.
All right. All right. Well, we've been doing a ton of stuff. I have one more thing. You have one more thing. And then we're going to go to our break.
Yes.
Okay. For science.
For science.
So you remember we did the chicken tenders coated in the crushed up sweet and spicy Doritos.
Yes.
Which we thought were going to be really good, but we pan fried them and they didn't taste very good.
Yes.
So today,
this
is take two. We did the same thing, except we baked them instead using the convection oven.
Yeah.
And number one, they came out awesome in terms of like the chicken.
They were crispy and
a little bit of the flavor, but mostly it's just not there.
The one I had, I enjoyed this a lot more than the fried ones.
Oh, they were better. Sure. They were way better than the fried ones for a lot of reasons. Number one, there was more
of the flavor there. There wasn't a lot.
But
there
just wasn't enough. There wasn't enough to really, really differentiate these things. And so maybe we'll try. We can do just regular breaded chicken tender sometime or something.
Cornflakes
like that.
Or crushed up tortilla chips, since they obviously come out nice and crispy
or something.
Yeah.
But like any kind of Dorito flavoring kind of thing.
Yeah, not worth it.
Just it's not worth it. So don't. I mean. I probably had more fun eating this hot and spicy or spicy and sweet or whatever Doritos while I was making the things to put in the oven.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of bummed because there weren't any more to eat afterwards.
So don't waste them on cooking.
Yeah.
Just eat them.
Yeah. So that's the update on that. And we had some back talk.
We have some back talk.
All right.
So on our Facebook group, we got a little story here from Chad Gray.
Which is awesome. I love the story.
Yes. I will summarize it. If you're interested in the whole thing, you can see it on our group. Chad Gray started playing games together with his daughter, as just a way to connect. And then they started talking about creating a board game together.
Which is awesome.
Which is awesome. And they got serious enough about it that they playtested it and they designed it and they went through lots of refining it. And it is currently on Kickstarter.
Which is awesome.
And the Kickstarter runs for another 10 or 12 days and it is doubly funded already.
Awesome. That is amazing. So what you should do is you should go to our Facebook community, thefamilygamers.com/community, and you should check it out and leave chat a comment. Let me know what you think.
After we record, I will leave a comment so that everybody can know what the Kickstarter is, because he didn't want to put himself out there and look like he was just fishing for...
Which is cool, which is very kind of him. So we're going to make sure to post that. Yeah. It'll be in the show thread also. Yeah.
If you're curious, the name of the game is Goatfish. You are a goat herder. It looks really cute.
Mm-hmm. All right, we are going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we are going to talk about some frightfully fun games.
Ooh. And we're back! So, we want games that fit the Halloween season, the Halloween theme,
mm-hmm.
but that our six-year-old and nine-year-old can play, but especially the six-year-old.
Right, right, yeah. I mean, our focus here was to capture two very different things, right? This Halloween, spooky, scary kind of thing, and stuff for kids.
Yeah.
Which, you know, like we mentioned earlier, was a little bit harder than we originally expected.
Yeah. We did get a lot of feedback and a lot of ideas.
Yeah, we put a post in the Family Gamers community, thefamilygamers.com/community, and we got some fantastic responses. So thank you very much to everybody, especially Nick Martinelli, who wrote like a novel.
giant list of doom.
He actually went back in and edited it and kept adding things and included Board Game Geek links and stuff. We got to have him on the show at some point or something. Yeah. I mean,
I will admit, there are several ghost or witch or whatever games put out by Habba, which does interest me because they do a great job with games for the younger.
Yeah, younger Habba crowd. Games in general. I mean, almost universally, if you go to like the Board Gaming for Kids or Board Gaming with Kids Facebook group or
people
really
will always
any
mention
gaming
Habba.
Group, it's like, okay, number one, anything by Habba. Number two, anything by Game Right. You know, and that's kind of how these things generally go. And then they start listing individual games. But Habba makes fantastic games. They use wooden components for most of their stuff, so it lasts forever.
Yeah.
They just do a great job.
Yeah. So while we can't speak from experience on specifically Clumsy Witch by Habba or Spookies or Ghost Blasters, they're by Habba. I figured they can't be bad.
Right. Right. And you know what? They're also usually not that expensive. So that's nice too.
Yeah.
So, but we are going to talk about four games that we
have
direct experience with.
That we have. We've played.
We own all
with
four
our kids.
Of these.
Yeah.
Good times. And the first one on the list is a game that maybe you might not put in that Halloween theme, but if you think about it, it's kind of creepy, and that's Potion Explosion.
Yes. You could totally make it creepy with
downright,
black light.
Yeah. This game is it's just downright fun to play. Like, it almost doesn't matter at the end who wins. Plus, I always win this game, so it's fine, whatever. I don't always win this game.
You don't always win. Just most of the time.
We talked about Potion Explosion on the show before. It's a game from Cool Meaning or Not. We heard about it from Married with BG a while ago.
Yeah.
We picked it up. So this is the board game version of a Match 3 game.
Sort of.
That has now been converted back into an iOS app, which I just think is hysterical. But it's really cool because you build this, like, kind of...
So you've got this dispenser.
Dispenser thing, and you pull out actual marbles, and you make potions and stuff. It's really a lot of fun. I like it quite a bit.
Yeah. So moving slightly further into the spooky...
Yeah, these are in no real particular order.
Into the spookiness. We got Voodoo.
Mm-hmm. Voodoo is another game that we've talked about on the show. So this is published by Mayday Games. Voodoo is a game where basically you're kind of moving along this victory point track, and the way that you get victory points is by playing curses on people. And those curses are usually silly things, like you have to pat yourself on the head anytime you roll the dice, or you have to, you know, you have to always have one hand in the air, or always one foot in the air, or just all these silly things.
Or you have to talk
things.
With
you
a silly accent.
You always have to say things that are funny,
yeah.
Stuff like that. So it's kind of a fun-loving game, but it's got a little bit of that voodoo aspect to it.
Yeah. So and a little bit of take that.
A little bit, yes.
Not
so if you're
much.
Super sensitive to the voodoo thing or the kind of the faux spiritual,
well,
you know, whatever,
then don't do it.
But yeah. It's a pretty funny game. The kids like it when they make me talk in funny accents.
Yes. Third on our list, in no particular order, is Boo!
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 So we just picked this game up this week.
Yep.
But it is adorable.
And tiny.
And tiny.
This can fit in your pants pocket. Tiny.
Yes. So, Boo is a game from Perplexed, and is one of their Pack-O games. It's about the size of a pack of gum.
I'm going to say this is an inch, not even an inch wide, probably 3 inches tall and a half an inch thick.
Yeah.
This is small.
It's a tiny box, which means we can tell you we got it at Barnes & Noble, but we couldn't find it right away when we looked for it.
Just ask for the Pack-O games.
And
it was $5.
Yes.
It was cheap.
It's a really cute little two-player puzzly kind of game. Two players are doing battle for control of the graveyard. You're putting cards down to flip as many ghosts of your color face up as possible, either black or white. In the end, the person who wins is the one who has the most ghosts of their color showing at the end of the game.
Right. So each card has three kind of squares on it.
Yep.
And those squares have either a ghost looking in a particular direction or a gravestone on them.
Or an empty space.
There are some with empty spaces.
Spaces.
Okay.
Yeah.
Every card is two-sided. So it's black ghost on one side and white ghost on the other side. And so when you put that down, depending on the direction the ghost is looking, if it's looking, you know, through other ghosts of its color, mm-hmm. At a ghost of the opposite color, so white at black or black at white, and that ghost is not looking back at them, that card gets flipped over.
And I love the not looking back at them.
Right. It reminds me of Mario.
Yes, exactly. But it's definitely one of those where the strategy can start going deep as you get into it, mm-hmm. but the rules themselves are nice and simple. So.
Right. Yeah. And there definitely were a few times when I played it for the first time that like that whole, I just didn't really grok that whole look through the other cards to get.
Yeah.
And you can look across gaps. Just you look until you either go off the map or you hit a gravestone.
Yeah.
Because you can't look through gravestones.
Right.
So that's Boo. I mean, it's pretty great. I like it a lot.
It's cute. It's fun. It is a great use of $5.
Yes. Agreed. So skip a latte, you guys. No pumpkin spice tomorrow.
Our last game of the four we wanted to feature for today is, of course, Zombie Dice.
We have talked a lot about Zombie Dice. It is a great push your luck die rolling game where you're trying to eat people's brains.
You are zombies.
You are zombies trying to eat
people's brains and not get shot in the head.
Mm-hmm. It is incredibly self-explanatory. It's probably the Steve Jackson game that we've played the most.
Oh, definitely.
And it's really fun.
Yeah. And you can, of course, for kids, you can always tone down the, like, you don't have to say you're getting shot in the head. It's a shotgun blast.
Scare you away.
Yes.
Or whatever. Yeah.
If you get three, you're scared away and you can't get any
brains. Right. You don't have to make it gory.
Yeah. That's the four games we really wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, we have a bajillion honorable mentions, and we're going to mention a couple of those. But these are the four that we looked at, and we said, look, for the most part, these games are not expensive. I think Boo's $5, Zombie Dice you can get for probably under 10.
Under 10.
Definitely under 15.
You can get it with expansions for under 15.
Voodoo is going to be in the $20 range. Potion Explosion might be a little bit more expensive.
That's a little
you get
more
all
pricey.
Those marbles. But... you know, you can go out tomorrow, go to Target, go to Barnes & Noble, pick up some of these games, and you will have Halloween-themed games this year. These are all retail-available games.
Yes. Couple of honorable mentions. Werewords. Mm-hmm. This is another game we recently picked up.
Yep.
It's a 20 question style word guessing game.
Figure out what the word is by only asking yes or no questions.
Yeah. But there's a great twist to this game.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a few really neat twists to this.
You have to have at least four players, but one of them is a werewolf and doesn't want you to guess the word in the time limit.
Right. But you don't know who the werewolf
is. But you don't know. And if the team does not guess the word, they can still win by guessing who the werewolf is. So the werewolf wants to slow you down, but not make it too obvious.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's a really neat game. And it's another one of these games that uses an app. Which is nice for two reasons. Number one, the dictionary of words is in the app, so it's not like you have to buy an expansion once you've used up all the stuff that's in the box.
Yeah.
Number two, I think there's something about the multimedia experience that I really like. Like with Stop Thief, it was really cool.
Well,
I really liked it.
In the case of werewords, it means that you don't need another person as the sort of adjudicator of the game.
Yep.
Because that's what the app does for you.
Right. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to playing this a bit. Like you said, we really just got it, so we haven't really had the time to put it through its paces. But I mean, hey, look, it's a Halloween game. This is a game, by the way, we have kind of been looking for some, not really party games. I don't really want party larger group games. And this is something that really I think is going to fit that bill. So that 5 to 8, 5 to 10 group
player
size, range,
especially more than six players, it's tough to find good engaging stuff.
I think we don't have too many games that play better more than six. Five players.
Fair
even
enough.
So I'm really looking forward to it from that regard. So werewords, definitely a good one. That's Bezier Games.
Yeah,
so they've got a lot of good stuff this year.
And our last honorable mention, besides Nick Martinelli's giant list, several people recommended Ghost Fight and Treasure Hunters. Which has also been reskinned as a Ghostbusters-themed game.
Ah, there you go. So I did see that one at Barnes & Noble when I was there. I just made the decision not to pick it up. So
fair.
Yeah. So I can't really speak too much about that
game. It is highly recommended by multiple people.
Yeah, you check out the Facebook community, and many people on there recommended it. I will actually add another one to the list.
Okay.
So we've talked a lot about Castle Panic because we love Castle Panic.
Yes.
There is a variant of Castle Panic called Dead Panic, which is, it's
zombies
and stuff like that. So if you like Castle Panic or you've liked our descriptions of Castle Panic, there is a kind of spooky themed version of that called Dead Panic that you could definitely check out.
Yeah.
Fireside Games. Good stuff.
Yeah. We enjoy them.
So I guess that's going to be it for us this week.
All right.
Well, as always, you can get a hold of us in many ways on the internet. You can head over to our Twitter. We are at
FamilyGamersAA.
Or our Instagram page, where we post pictures of basically every game that we're playing.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah. And that is also
at FamilyGamersAA.
You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/
FamilyGamersAA.
Or our community, which is at FamilyGamers.com/community. You can check out all of our blog posts and our reviews and even the podcast at our website, thefamilygamers.com. You can always email me, andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Please head over to your podcast provider of choice and leave us a review. We very much appreciate it. Super lots.
Please.
And in just a month, we're going to be at PAX Unplugged.
I'm so excited.
We are going to have a panel on Sunday at 11:30.
11:30 in the morning on Sunday.
The PAX Unplugged schedule is up, unplugged.paxsite.com. I even looked at it and, we're there.
Family Gamers.
So if you are planning on heading to PAX Unplugged, please come and at least say hi or something. We'll be roaming the floor with our Family Gamers t-shirts on.
Yes.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, it's a board game convention in Philadelphia. It's unfortunately the same weekend as BGGCon, but if you're in the Northeast and you can't fly to Texas, come to Philly instead.
Sounds like a good plan to me. We can't fly to Texas right now.
Absolutely. So that's going to be it for us this week. We had a really good time talking about spooky games. And until next week,
play spooky games with your kids.